tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive.
You're listening to the Thinker Sensitive podcast. This is your host, Chad Graham, with my co-host, Ryan Ragazine, who is also our producer on the show. This is our fifth and final episode in our new series on true friendship. In this season of Thinker Sensitive, Ryan and I attempt to offer a thoughtful, reflective examination of both the idea of friendship and the practical outworking of friendship from a Christian perspective. Learn about why friendship is important, what it is, how it takes place, and if and when a friendship should end. One of the reasons we decided to produce this season is because Ryan and I observe that true friendship is under attack in our culture. The word friend and the idea of friendship have been loosely used to describe many things having little to do with friendship. We feel it necessary to call out some of the common forms of relationships that are not truly friendships that do harm. Ryan, why don't you get us started with the first type of relationship we see today that is not truly friendship?
Yeah, the first thing is non-committal relationships. So we have a big issue with commitment in our culture. We don't want to fully commit to the obligations of a true friendship. We don't want to fully commit to being available. We don't want to fully commit to fidelity in a relationship. So we have a difficult time with commitment. That's the first thing. Second thing is, in the social media age, we have this issue, I think, with depersonalization. So we depersonalize those that we have relationships with. It's almost inevitable in social media and in, you know, our technologically driven society. We mostly interact with people, it seems, through computer screens and through cell phones. And what we're missing is we lack that personal, face-to-face human encounter, which I think is very important.
Yeah, it's like a disembodied friendship. You know, this relationship that only exists within the texts of Facebook Messenger or Instagram likes or all these different things.
Yeah.
And maybe the chief depersonalization in a friendship today is this concept of unfriending.
Right.
You know, going online and making a kind of a low-key declaration that we're not friends anymore through a couple of clicks of the button.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that that's kind of like peak depersonalization?
It promotes a really fickle, impulsive concept of friendship. Unfriending comes,
and we've both unfriended people. So I mean, don't feel like
we're
commenting on this nasty culture sure. we're a part of as well.
No, we're guilty. So I think unfriending is a very easy thing to do because there's no real consequences that come with it. You know, it's not like if we were in person, face-to-face with someone. And
you're not going to unfriend your mother-in-law.
No.
Right? We tend to unfriend those friends who we don't have to see if we don't want to.
Right.
That's really what this depersonalization is. Mm-hmm. They're not really within the – they're not real friends.
Right.
They're not within the framework of our life. There is not going to be a consequence to this action other than maybe just getting a dig.
Yep.
You know, getting that little satisfactory uh-huh. dig at a person.
So it's this extension of the non-committal, depersonalized practice of friendship in our culture. We treat people as disposable.
Yeah.
We treat people as unimportant.
Yeah.
And we cheapen friendship in these different ways.
Yeah. And unfriending is just one of those outward signals that we can give in this digital age for showing chief disrespect to someone. Okay, so unfriending depersonalizes. It shows the fickle view of relationships.
Creates superficiality, right?
Yeah, creates superficiality.
Shallow friendships.
Friends one day, not the next.
Surface level. Yeah.
What about utilitarian relationships? Those relationships that are strictly a means to an end that, of course, serves me. Aren't you seeing more and more of those today? The relationships that, I mean, purely exist within the confines of this will put me ahead.
Yep.
This will get me what I want sexually.
Mm-hmm.
This will fulfill a certain desire I have. Means to an end relationships. What do you think?
Well, isn't it true that we live in a society where at least some have lost faith in the possibility of altruism?
Yeah. Yes.
That altruism doesn't even exist.
It's not real. If I do something for someone else and I derive any level of satisfaction in doing something for someone else,
mm-hmm.
it's immediately reduced to, well, you just did that because it made you happy.
Right. Yeah. Right? There are no truly selfless acts.
Yeah.
And by the way, Chad and I do not believe that.
No.
We believe that altruism is real, and we believe that love is real, and love is selfless.
And it should be a routine part of life.
Yes.
Not just in friendships, but especially so in friendships.
Yeah, so in these utilitarian friendships, we befriend someone to receive and not to give of ourselves.
Give us some examples of things you receive.
Yeah, maybe psychological benefits, because it's psychologically beneficial to have friends in your life. It's emotionally beneficial to have friends in your life. You could be doing it for, you know, health.
Yeah.
You know, for the health benefits. There are societal benefits.
Yeah.
A really good example would be within the context of our workplaces. There can be career benefits. You know, if at your job you're surrounded by a lot of people, it could be beneficial to befriend those people, to befriend management, to befriend bosses. It could help you move along on the economic ladder or within your career or your workplace.
Yeah. And think about how that plays out in popular culture all the time. How many movies are there where a person engineers a circumstance where they bump into somebody important or they rub shoulders with someone wealthy?
Mm-hmm.
And we look at those kind of hijinks in the movies and never really think, we might be doing that.
Right.
We might be nicer to this person who can give us a promotion.
Yeah.
And even pursue friendship with them, even though we wouldn't do so otherwise,
yep.
because we benefit from it. These are utilitarian relationships. Yeah.
The popular person at school.
Yeah.
If I'm friends with that person, I can have an increased, you know, status, an increased popularity myself.
Interesting. All different types of utilitarian relationships. Again, relationships that are strictly a means to an end. Now, I want to be careful here. It's okay to want a relationship because it will also serve you, because it will also benefit you. These relationships, we mean, are strictly a means to an end. You don't plan on putting anything into this relationship necessarily that will benefit the other person, or you're only willing to do so in the circumstance that you maximize your benefit in the relationship. This idea that altruism is dead has really affected our friendships.
Yes.
We really have this skeptical bent that, you know, why does this guy want to be my friend? What's his angle? What are you going to hit me up for later on down the road? This skepticism is detrimental to our relationships.
You know what else? I know we've talked a lot about reciprocation within the context of this series, and so reciprocation is not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. But I think also because we distrust that a person can truly do something with no strings attached, we feel a need for reciprocation. It kind of comes from like a sense of guilt.
Uh-huh.
Like, this person did something nice for me, so I have to reciprocate. Instead of reciprocating out of a pure love for that person.
Yeah.
And that's related to serving someone out of the pure love for that person.
Yes, and one way to test this in your relationship is when you go to reciprocate, you know, it might take a gift. You know, someone might have to initiate that. That's okay. But when you get that gift from the other person, I've felt this way before. Sure. I'm gonna just lay it bare, right?
Yeah.
That feeling of angst or anxiety or panic, like, now I have to return this favor.
Yeah.
Or I'm indebted somehow. That is the absolute wrong feeling you want to encourage in a relationship, in a friendship.
Yeah.
It should be exciting. In the way that, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone of the opposite sex, if you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a husband or a wife, and they give you something, it should also be exciting to give something back.
Right.
Same is true in friendship. You know, if a gift is given to you and it's meaningful and this person has showed time and consideration for who you are, it should bring joy. It should heighten the value of the relationship to then be thinking of them. What are they like? What do they need? What are they, you know, what would they be excited to receive from me out of the blue?
And there's something intrinsic in our very being that we feel joy when we do something for another. And I think that God is the one who has imparted that.
Yeah.
Because that is not really explainable
anywhere else in the animal kingdom.
And from a naturalistic, philosophical, naturalistic perspective.
Yeah. The true satisfaction of serving others.
Yeah. So the last thing real quick that we want to look at is the most prevalent perversion of friendship is what we're calling it. And that's to only be friends with people we agree with.
Oh, yeah.
So we're a segmented society.
This is everywhere.
That's divided up in factions, in groups. And we only hang out with people who are in our camp, right? We only hang out with people who agree with us on, you know, this political issue or this religious issue. So the Republican only hangs out with Republicans.
Yep.
The Democrat only hangs out with Democrats.
Yeah. Religious, non-religious. We keep these bifurcations to no end. I don't even know how any of us have friends anymore.
Right.
This is so common.
Mm-hmm.
It's so common to think that, and again, this is where it kind of mixes in with that other idea that is good. Okay, so we are trying to find friends that have things in common with us.
Yes.
Points of interest.
Sure.
But if we take that to the extreme and say we can only be friends now.
Right.
With those people that we have complete hegemony with, where there's no difference between our viewpoints, we are going to be lonely and isolated and have too many enemies to count.
Yes. Find a person who thinks exactly like you, who believes exactly the same things. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Even people within my camp or your camp, if you have a camp, there's going to be a ton of diversity within that group.
Yes. And if you're using the word camp often, and you're not doing a lot of camping, you should really look at, you know, maybe intentionally going after some friends. Here's an encouragement in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Find some friends on the other side of whatever aisle we're talking about here.
Right.
If it's political, if it's religious worldview, if it's, if it's Broncos and Raiders fans, whatever it has to be, you know, you really are missing out on life. You're missing out on some of the best exchanges life has to offer.
Yep.
When you absconce yourself and you remove yourself from the possibility of actually having your mind changed.
Yeah.
Because someone you respect and you care for and you have the true qualities of friendship is allowed to speak in your life, that's an incredibly invigorating experience to have your mind changed by such a person. And you really forfeit a lot if you don't have those relationships.
Yeah.
All right. As though we're never controversial, let's get into maybe one of the most controversial statements that we'll make in this podcast. It's the last episode. We've laid out our arguments for what true friendship is. We've laid out our arguments for what we think the ideal friendship ought to look like and what the Christian ought to be in light of true friendship. Now, Ryan and I are in agreement that authentic Christians are the best friends to have.
Yeah.
Let me say that again. Ryan and I agree on this, that authentic Christians, those people who are genuinely seeking after Christ, modeling their life and their behaviors, their attitudes and their affections after Jesus Christ, our Savior, those people ought to be the best of friends around. Ryan, go ahead and back us up on this.
Yeah, so we are differentiating between a genuine Christian and a nominal Christian, though we're not going to get into, we're not going to delve into the details on the differences between those two people. But, you know, when I think about this, I think about a historical analogy. So in the early history of the church, Christians were persecuted within the Roman Empire, and various Roman emperors just kind of explicitly and directly tried or attempted to persecute the church. And there were many martyrs of the faith during this time. And so there was a widespread hatred of Christians, dislike of Christians. There were stereotypes about Christians, caricatures. You know, they thought that Christians were cannibals. You know, there were a lot of negative ideas about Christians and hatred as well. And so during that time, some of the Christian leaders wrote government officials arguing that Christians were actually ideal citizens because they were law-abiding people and people of high character. I think this is really relevant to today's day and age because there are a lot of Christian haters out there. Listen, there's a lot of haters in general out there today.
Sure.
A lot of critics.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not just of Christians. But
yeah, and let me side note here. I want to throw out a principle. It is always easier to critique than it is to believe in something.
Yes.
It is always easier to critique something than to affirm something. The critic lives the easy life. The one who believes something lives the hard life.
Yes.
That's another podcast we're going to do. Right.
Series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So a lot of Christian haters out there today. There are many stereotypes and caricatures of Christians that exist today. And listen, let me say, many of these caricatures are the fault of Christians.
Yep.
Many of these stereotypes are
fueled by real evidence.
Yes.
Of poor Christian character and poor Christian attitude and poor Christian friendship.
Yep. And the failings of the church throughout history.
Yes. Over and over again.
Yes.
However,
yes,
we would attribute each and every one of those slights and true blemishes on the bride of Christ towards unauthentic followers of Christianity.
Right.
Those who are not holding true to the ethic that Jesus promotes.
Yeah. So because these stereotypes exist, because this kind of negative stigma exists in our culture, there are a lot of non-Christians who have no desire to be friends with a Christian.
Yeah. Judgmental, judgy Christians.
Yep. Hypocritical.
Fundamentalists. Backwoods.
Yep. Overly dogmatic.
Yep.
Sure.
Superior, thinking that they're
self-righteous.
Superior. Yeah.
See, Chad and I can list all of the faults of the church.
Yes.
And, you know, we can go into that some other time. But for now, let's look at this from the perspective of pros and cons. So if I'm a non-Christian, what are the pros and the cons to having a Christian friend or being in relationship with a Christian? So let's look first at the cons. We're in this habit of starting with worst and then moving to best. So why not continue that?
Two pessimists run a podcast.
Yeah, there you go. So here are the cons. So if I'm a non-Christian, I might believe that Christians are judgmental and that being around a Christian, that makes me feel guilty.
Yep.
So this might be true at times. There might be authentic Christians who actually do make you feel guilty by calling something out or confronting you in some way. That's you know, certainly a possibility. But the question that I'd ask here is this actually a projection? Do I feel guilty when I say certain things or do certain things around Christians, even when they don't say anything at all? I feel like I've run into this issue as a Christian in my life. There have been friends that I had who weren't Christians, and they just kind of avoided me because of it.
Yeah.
They avoided me because they felt for some reason like I would judge them or I would make them feel guilty.
Yeah.
And let me just say, like, I don't think I'm a very judgy person.
Yeah.
So it wasn't coming from anything I was saying or doing.
Yeah.
I think it was something that they were just kind of projecting onto me.
I think there's another way to account for this too.
Yeah.
Is I think that we gave in our previous episodes a pretty compelling case that a friend, a true friend, can judge you.
Yes, sure.
So if you're adverse to judgment of any kind,
right,
then you're actually suffering anyway. And we would like to pull you into the fray of friendship where other people can speak into your life and you can change as a result of the wisdom of those you trust.
Yeah.
Now, if it's explicitly Christians, you just don't want judging you, then that's a whole different thing. But to avoid judgmental relationships is to stay a child.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yes.
Put friends around you who will offer astute judgments.
Right.
Judgments informed by wisdom and good character and long processes of thoughtful rumination on your character and your behaviors.
Yeah.
That's the rich life.
Yeah.
Don't avoid judgment.
Yeah. I mean, another thing is, do we recognize that non-Christians are also judgmental?
Right.
Do I recognize that I myself am judgmental?
Right.
Right. This gets to the thing of, like, we're so quick to critique others and not to critique ourselves. We also have to understand that when we critique another, that's a judgment.
Right.
So when I critique a Christian for being judgmental or thinking that that person is judgmental, I'm judging that person.
Making a judgment.
Yeah.
So let's not fear judgment so much, I think, is a takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least if you're going to be honest and say, I don't want to be around Christians because they're judgmental,
mm-hmm.
just make sure you see that you're judging as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, what else?
Well, another thing, if I'm a non-Christian, I might not want to be friends with a Christian because of disagreement on really important issues. And the question I'd pose is, in that instance, do I lack the kind of tolerance that we've been talking about? Do I lack inclusivism? Do I lack a value for true coexistence? And the last thing is, if I'm a non-Christian, I might think that my Christian friends are going to try and convert me.
Yeah.
Right?
That anxiety is real.
Mm-hmm. I might think that they view me as a project.
Yeah. Right.
Uh-huh.
And even in a utilitarian way, a means to an end.
Yes.
Another notch in the belt.
Right.
Another jewel in the crown in heaven, right?
Yeah. And this is the beauty of the Christian faith, by the way, is Christianity is not merit-based, it's grace-based.
There's no commission on souls saved for Christ.
No, there's no quota I have to meet.
Yeah. Right. If you decide through the course of our discourse and our relationship that placing your faith in Jesus Christ is wise because it's true.
Yeah.
Praise God. I want that to happen.
Right.
More than anything. That's what I want for all of my friends and all of my...
Right. But you're not thinking about a reward.
No.
That's not in your mind.
No. And I don't really choose my friends that way either.
Right.
That doesn't make for the best of friendships,
mm-hmm.
the best couch time conversations either. So I think, you know, taking a breath being charitable on both sides. Christian, yes, listen, yes. We could very easily turn this thing around and talk to Christians who have never made a non-Christian friend in their entire life because of all the same reasons.
Yep. They're in their little Christian bubble.
Yeah. Never have made a friend outside the church.
And have never, you know, listened to non-Christian music or, ooh, that's a scary place.
Yeah.
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 I don't want to go to that place.
Man. There's so many other seasons that are just unfurling before us. But maybe let's leave with a positive note and just say, look, we believe that Christians make the best friends because authentic Christians should be modeling their life after what we believe to be the perfect human. And so as Christians develop over time, as they become more like Christ, as they subdue the passions and desires that would lead them away from God and what is good, they become better people. They become something that is good. Mm-hmm. And so we're making the argument here that finding friends who are on that path are incredibly good for you.
Yes.
And should, by all accounts, enliven and add and enrich much in your life.
Yeah, that's the pro. That's the pro that if I'm a non-Christian and I make friends with a Christian, I'm making friends with someone who has that virtue and that character. I have a relationship with someone who values me as a person, who values friendship itself, who is committed, faithful, gracious, forgiving, just, honest, selfless, humble, patient, kind, a person who truly loves me, wants my best, my thriving, my ultimate good.
Even when you hurt them.
Yes.
Even when you don't show that in kind.
Yes.
And they hold to all those reasons for friendship and all of those virtues in pursuit of them. And it's not because of you.
Right.
Their commitment to God and their commitment to upholding those virtues are so much deeper than a superficial human friendship.
Yeah.
That it just has all of these corollary benefits to friendships they make in this life.
Right. And let's be careful. We want to qualify here. We're not saying that non-Christians are not capable of having these virtues and living these virtues out. We're simply saying that true Christians, by definition, will live this way.
They must.
And will be this way. And of course, all of the major world religions teach a very similar ethic.
Yes.
So we're not saying that this isn't possible outside of Christianity.
We're just making the argument that authentic Christians ought to be and will be on this path.
Yes.
That's all the time that we have for this episode on fake friendships. Be sure to listen to the other episodes in this season to discover what true friendship is and how to obtain it. This episode is part of a series called True Friendship, available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and more. This is Chad Graham, and we'll see you next time on the Thinker Sensitive Podcast.
This episode and all episodes of Thinker Sensitive are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and more. If you wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.